Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balaji. Good to have you here with us. Sorry for the off show last week. We are presented by BetDSI.com. You can find us on Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, and Twitter at the handle Golf News Net. You can find me personally at Ryan Balaji on Twitter. Find all of our work at GolfNewsNet.com and the Golf News Net apps for Android and Apple devices. And a lot of our work is on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf Blog on sports.yahoo.com. So this week's show, we're going to focus primarily on the Ryder Cup situation, being the three captains picks that were made by Darren Clarke on the European side, and the four picks that we're probably going to see, at least in my estimation, right now as it stands, on the U.S. side, along with the eight guys that automatically qualified. And then we'll end the show talking a little bit about how a story gets spiked. And this is something I'm not going to talk about anywhere else, at least for the time being. So this is something that kind of stays between you and me. Let's put it that way. And you never heard about it from me. But we'll get back to that in just a little bit. As I mentioned, we are presented by BetDSI.com. We use their odds every single week for our PGA Tour, European Tour, and sometimes LPGA Tour odds posts, as well as our fantasy information. And we like their odds layout because it gives you a good idea of where the money is going and how the odds change based on that money push. And so if you're in a country or a locale where you can do this and you can bet legally, use BetDSI.com. If not, and you're just a fantasy player looking for a little bit more information every week, use their live odds to give you a good idea of where the money is moving every single week. Okay, so let's go into first part of this. The European team is now complete. We've got 12 players on the team. We've got six rookies, five that qualified among the nine that get in automatically. And then among the three, Thomas Peters is the one lone rookie in that group. So let's go over the whole roster real quick. So we've got Rory McIlroy, we've got Danny Willett, we've got Matt Fitzpatrick, Andy Sullivan, Henrik Stenson, Justin Rose, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, I think I mentioned Thomas Peters, and there's one that's evading me for a moment, but that's your 12. And the three guys that were added on Tuesday at the request of Darren Clarke were Westwood, Keimer, and Peters. And again, among those 12 guys, you have six rookies. That is relative inexperience. However, that team, the U.S. team, had, I think, six or seven rookies in 2008, and they stood out. They won, obviously. And they won in part because Nick Faldo was a terrible captain. But the other part of it, I think, was Paul Azinger's brilliance to put those rookies with people that made them feel comfortable. Whether they were other rookies, whether they were veterans, whatever it was, his psychological analysis, and I'm not calling Paul Azinger Sigmund Freud, but he had some common sense, and his solutions worked out to group guys for practice and matches in a way that made them feel comfortable. The performance worked. Darren Clarke, I think, is going to employ a similar system. Now, it's not going to be the pod system or whatever you want to call it, but it seems like Clarke is trying to figure out a way to match players with others and use some mix of experience and inexperience. So he's got half experienced with at least one Ryder Cup appearance and half without. And he's going to try and mix them together because he knows he's kind of at a transition point in the European Ryder Cup stable. You've got guys who have been a part of the team for a long time. They're phasing out. And it's not like we're going to see Lee Westwood at a whole lot more Ryder Cups. We'll see Sergio Garcia at a few more, but then he's kind of going to go into the vice captaincy churn before he gets to be a captain. Henrik Stenson is 40. He's starting to move away from playing in Ryder Cups. He will probably play one or two more before he gets into that situation where he could someday become a captain. You got Justin Rose, who's kind of in the sweet spot. Same with Rory McIlroy. Those guys who are kind of in their primes. They're short of 40. They're still able to play on several more Ryder Cups, if not many more Ryder Cups. And then you've got these other guys without much experience. Willett, who's up there in his late 20s. He hopes to be around for a while, but he's erratic. And we've seen that in the results after the Masters. You got Peters, who was young, was an NCAA champion in the United States in Illinois. and has turned himself pretty quickly into a winning player. Maybe not a consistent player, but a winning player. Three European Tour wins, including the Made in Denmark. You've got Matt Fitzpatrick, who was the U.S. amateur champion, basically went to Northwestern for a semester and then decided, wait, I'm gonna make some money. And won the British Masters, has had a good start to his career as a professional, made this team. And he kind of lacks brilliance in any one particular area. It's almost kind of like a Luke Donald without the putting. He's not very long. He hits the ball pretty well. He's not all that straight either. But the add-up is good. And you look at a guy, Chris Wood was the guy I didn't mention earlier. You look at Chris Wood, who's making his Ryder Cup debut. Again, a guy who is potentially a part of Ryder Cups for a number of years to come, but is probably going to be more like a Thomas Bjorn, who doesn't make every Ryder Cup, but when he makes it by doing some pretty brilliant stuff. And Chris Wood won the BMW PGA Championship, their equivalent of the Players. Although Keith Pelley, the commissioner, may disagree with that sentiment. But that is kind of his hang-up has been, he has good moments, but not great years. This has been a very good year for him, by and large, by his standard. So you've got these guys who, many of them are in their late 20s, mid-20s, that have the potential to be a future part of these teams, blended with a couple guys who are on their way out in Westwood and Stenson and sort of Garcia, but not really. And then you've got guys still in their sweet spot, Garcia and Rose and McIlroy, trying to kind of keep it, and Keimer, trying to keep it all together. So it'll be interesting to see how those pairings work out and who gets five matches, who gets three, maybe two, depending on how they perform. I wonder if Darren Clark will have a quick hook, kind of like Tom Watson did in 2014, where if it's just going sideways, you start all over. You don't stick with what you believe in, you start over. I don't think that Clark will do that. I think he will have a game plan, and he will stick with it, because that is what the European captains have done with success, by and large, for the last 20 years. And that's what they have decided to do. They've found things that they believe will work, and when they're not working, they don't press and change. They stick with it, and they see if it pans out, because they believe in what they're putting together. I think Davis Love will learn some lessons on the American side from what happened in 2012, not only in terms of in-match, in-cup performance, in-cup decision-making, but also in the guys that he adds to his team. 2012, he picked four guys, picked a mix of veterans and semi-young blood, and it didn't go all that well. Now, no one expected for Steve Stricker to go 0-4. Just no one counted on that. He was basically put on the team to play with Tiger Woods, and it did not go well. It just didn't work out. And that wasn't necessarily Steve Stricker's fault, although he struggled. And you had Dustin Johnson as part of that. You had Hunter Mahan as part of that. So, I mean, this time around, Davis has eight guys that have automatically qualified. Seven of them have experience. You got Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, Zach Johnson, Jimmy Walker. Is that everybody? I pretty much got everybody. That's experience that works to the favor of American players, because they are now the team that's done this before, and they're doing it on home soil. So that's good for a point, basically. In the historical analysis, it's good for an extra point. So they start off up one. They've got more experience, which should conceivably worth a point. So they're up two. So now they've got to be able to manage to play the rest of the way better. So if you're Davis, recognizing a whole lot of things going on here. The primary thing here is you're trying to win this match. Obviously, the Americans have won. The last time they won was 2008. Before that, miracle at Brookline in 99. So we're not doing too hot in the grand scheme of things. And with that in mind, you have to think, okay, we got to win one here. I mean, that's the goal. Whatever it takes to win this one and maybe set up momentum for the future. So you go for the guys you believe are going to help you win now. But, and the other piece of this, is after 2014, after Tom Watson didn't do so hot, after the backlash against him, They formed this task force, and they said, we're going to figure out a way to create basically a winning lineage in the Ryder Cup. And to do that, you need to be able to think about the future. You need to think about the experience that you need to be successful in future matches, not only for players, but also for the vice captains who will eventually become the leaders as captains. And many of them will cycle through multiple times as captains and vice captains, and it'll kind of be a feeding system, so to speak. So in one sense, do you go after some young blood in terms of the players and your captain's picks, given that 7 of the 8 guys that automatically qualified are experienced players? They've done this before. Brooks Koepka is the only rookie among them. So do you go to your bench and say, all right, well, who doesn't have experience that's playing well that I can bring in? Maybe that's 1 or 2 guys. Maybe it's Justin Thomas. Maybe it's Daniel Berger. I would side towards Justin Thomas, but that's just me. Do you go for experience? I mean, do you pick Jim Furyk, who is, 15th, 16th in points at the closing, but he didn't play the first 6 months of the year, and he has played some demonstrably good golf in that stretch since he's come back. 2nd at the U.S. Open, bunch of different top 10s and 15s at the Canadian Open, at the Travelers, at Wyndham. You know, those were good results. So it's kind of hard to avoid picking the guy, even though he's obviously in his late 40s. He's way closer to being a captain than doing anything else in golf. He's closer to the Champions Tour, the PGA Tour Champions. Do you pick that guy, even though his Ryder Cup record is terrible and he has a putting liability? But has he earned it? Has he earned one last run? Or do you say to Furyk, we're really grateful for all of the times you've played in the Ryder Cup, but you needed to automatically qualify. That was the only way you were going to be a part of this team. We need you as a vice captain. We need you in a cart with an earpiece, and you need to be able to direct traffic. Thank you. Do you do that? I don't know if you can if you're Davis. I don't know if you could separate that reality from the relationship that they have together. I mean, they play on the tour together for 2.5 decades, basically. And do you all of a sudden kind of say, okay, well, I don't think you're good enough anymore, when Furyk has demonstrated through his PGA Tour play in a limited schedule that not only does he want to be a part of this team, but he is capable of scoring well enough to be a part of this team. And then you have a couple of other picks out there and guys that, I mean, Bubba Watson's 9th. How do you not pick Bubba Watson? He loves this competition. He embraces it. He wants the noise. He wants the rowdiness. He wants to be an instigator. He wants to be a provocateur. He wants, you know, to get the fans really involved in this, especially on home soil. Can you say to a 2-time Masters winner who hasn't had the best year this year, hey, yeah, I mean, we love what the energy you bring, but that's really all you're bringing, your liability in some other areas? Ooh, that's kind of harsh. How do you say that? I don't know if you can say that. I mean, traditionally, you pick the guy that finishes 1 out of qualifying, whether there were 2 picks, 3 picks, or 4 picks. Typically, what the American captain does is picks the person who came up short and then someone else, whether you dive deep or not. Those are your picks. And so it's kind of hard to imagine Bubba not getting picked to this team. I can see J.B. Holmes not getting a pick. Kind of out there. He's a little erratic. Not a good lag putter, which you kind of need in match play. So maybe you leave him off at 10th. You've got Fowler at 11, who seems like a mortal lock based on what Davis Love said in his news conference to start the week. And then you have Matt Kuchar, who basically lives in the same part of the country as Davis Love III. They are basically neighbors in Sea Island. And how do you not pick that guy, who's playing really good golf overall? Wasn't all that great in the majors this year whatsoever, but everywhere else, good stuff. How do you say to that guy, no thank you? So I don't envy Davis Love, but I think if you're thinking about the reality of the picks, he's going to pick Bubba, Ricky, Furyk, and Cooch. That's what my head says the 4 picks are right now. Now, the beauty of this system is, since they've implemented this change to pick, stagger the picks, to have 3 picks after the BMW Championship, which is next week, and then 1 final pick after the Tour Championship in 2 weeks after the BMW, you get basically two weeks, two tournaments, for these guys to go out and all out sprint and see where they would finish on the points list, and whether you use that as your metric. Love has said he thinks about statistics, that Patrick Reed and some others have turned him on to looking at how guys that are potential captain's picks may pair well with other players based on what they do, how their game works, how it looks. I think that's a good idea. I think it's an important idea. So I don't know what the metric is going to ultimately be, but I think I would like to see his captain's picks. I think you got to give Bubba a nod because his energy is infectious. I think that's good, but who do you pair him with? That's a problem. So that's kind of the pro-con. J.B. Holmes, terrible lag putter, doesn't seem to have a lot of guys on the team that would necessarily be his buddies, but does that really matter that much? He also seems to be rather patriotic. I think he would be an interesting pick, but he has some serious liabilities off the tee and on the greens. Do you pick Ricky, who demonstrated kind of the Webb Simpson way of, I want to be on this team, I'm going to do what it takes to be on this team, and then comes up short with basically two bad holes at the Barclays that cost him the win and the automatic pick? Do you go with that and you reward his commitment to trying to be a part of this process and representing his country? Does that have merit? I don't know. The decision is different for everybody. Do you feel like you should get basically effort points? I don't think that you do. If you're trying to win the match, then you want the person or persons that align best with the people that have automatically qualified and are most likely to get you a singles point, because they may not necessarily work out otherwise, but if they can get you that singles point, if you go 4-for-4 in your captain's picks on singles points, that's a long way toward winning. That means you are 10.5 points away, and out of 24 other matches, you only need to get less than half the points. So if I were captain, I would think, who is the guy most likely to get the full point in the singles against anybody Europe throws at me? And that would, in my mind, exclude Bubba Watson. He's pretty easy to razzle in a singles format without that captain to kind of pump him up when things are going well and to kind of calm him down a little bit when things are going too well. If you think about J.B. Holmes, he's such a wild card, you could oust him. Ricky Fowler is more likely to get you a half point than a whole point because he's never won a Ryder Cup match. But those points in close, those half points from zero and that point from a half is a big deal. And he may be the difference in that situation. I think you've got to pick him for that reason. Kuchar is he's steady. That's important in a four-ball match where you could pair him with someone who's a little bit more aggressive. I don't mean aggressive in terms of how they score. Obviously, Matt Kuchar can go low. But I mean almost recklessness, that you can send someone out there and cut them loose, almost like a Bubba, and go, just go for everything. It doesn't matter. Kuch is here. He's going to make pars and birdies. We want you to focus on birdies and eagles. Bubba, get out there. Or whoever it is. Brooks, get out there. Just do your thing and smash the ball, and it doesn't matter. We got Kuch for you. Okay, so that makes sense. Justin Thomas is someone that's up there that's getting some consideration because he would play well with Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth conceivably because they know each other. They played a lot of golf together. They vacation together, all that crap. That's a good friendliness there. Then you've got a pot of three right there in those three guys if you appoint him to the team. Daniel Berger has played a high volume of tournaments. He shouldn't be dinged for that, but he is highly erratic in his results. I mean, he can be great and he can be terrible. He can be healthy and injured. That's a problem. He also doesn't seem to get along very well with Brooks Koepka. So that could be an issue. I don't envy Davis. I think that it was easier to be Darren in thinking, I've got four guys for three spots, and I probably couldn't screw this up too bad if I tried. And I think it's a harder situation for Davis right now. So I don't envy him, but we'll see the first picks in a couple of weeks. All right, so the final thing I want to talk about, and I want to do it briefly in the show, is a story that has kind of been spiked. Yesterday I was out, so we're recording this on a Thursday. I was out on golf course on Wednesday playing with some new Cleveland Strixon clubs, which you'll see the review on the site, and they were incredible. So I got someone contacted me and said, hey, have you seen the Jordan Spieth pictures? I said, no, I've been out all day. I don't, what are you talking about? And I was forwarded a tweet from a user Trill Goldberg at Tank Top Poppy. And his tweet was, shout out Jordan Spieth, LMAO. Let's laugh my ass off for those of you who are maybe not so in tune with the acronyms. And it was a gallery of four pictures. Two of them were snaps from a woman named Nikki Amthor. She apparently works for a music video service. And the one is a picture of her and one of her female friends with Spieth. It says, left our green Blazers at home. Then the other picture is one of Spieth shirtless, checking his phone in her maybe bedroom, looks like. Not sure. And then there is a text message conversation with this guy. And it kind of talks about her, this woman, Nikki's experience with Spieth, that they apparently got together in a not hugs and kisses way while they were all together at some place. Apparently, Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas were there, and it was all kind of put out there. And apparently, there had been a decent amount of damage control from Spieth and his team somewhat covertly once they realized that this would be out there, or that it was out there, I guess, trying to get different publications not to publish this. And one publication, Busted Coverage, which kind of deals with more like sports rumors, like TMZ type stuff for sports, geared towards guys is the best way I can explain it. They published a story called Two Girls, One Spieth or something like that last night. And I read the story. It's basically all the stuff I'd seen in the tweet, all laid out right there. And a bunch of people retweeted it. 30, 40 people liked it. 30, 40 people retweeted it. The story was getting some traction, I suppose. And then the person or persons behind Busted Coverage tweeted out that they were getting pressure from Jordan Spieth's friends, quote-unquote, to take down the story, that they were mad about it. And then ultimately, they did take down the story. Now, there's another website, Shutface Golf. Shutfacegolf.com has a story up. And that's still up there. I don't know if the tweet is still there. I guess that would be a piece of interest to all of this. But if the reality is, yeah, that tweet is now gone. So the internet has basically been scraped of this story. Now, fortunately, we screenshotted everything. We have all the evidence that's out there. There's an ethical dilemma here. When something is in the public domain, once it is in the public domain, you can't take it back. You just can't. You can't say, this is something that happened, and take it back and say, no, it didn't. I find it curious, though, that this whole episode comes up. Because Spieth is a 22-year-old kid. I know he's got a girlfriend, supposedly, and Annie Barrett. I don't know how long they've been dating. I don't know if they're still dating. And quite frankly, I don't give a crap. But Spieth is a 22-year-old kid who can make his own decisions, and if he wants to do this kind of thing, fine. More power to him. So long as he's not hurting anybody and so long as it's consensual, no one cares. But then to go out there and to try to cozy up to sports outlets, either applying some pressure or making some false promises of access later, I don't agree with that. I'm not okay with that. And, you know, we've published stories in the past that are kind of borderline on whether you should. A great example is Andy Sullivan's partner, girlfriend, mother of his child, found out, or at least claims that she found out, that Andy Sullivan was not faithful to her at some point. I don't know what their arrangement is. I don't know what their relationship is. But she put him on blast, and so did her sister, on Twitter one night, and went after him pretty hard. And someone alerted me to those things. Again, in the public domain. I put them on the website. People were reading it. And then suddenly there was a conversation about if we wouldn't mind taking that down. Because the person in question had removed the tweets. And so they were no longer part of the public domain. I did because there are children involved. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of a line. Do kids get hurt? I wouldn't want my children getting hurt by something like that. So I'm going to take that down and leave it alone. Well enough. But this, who cares? Kid being 22, go get him, do whatever you got to do. We're all going to make mistakes in our lives. Raise your hands if you haven't. There are none of you who raise your hands. And let's move on. But I felt like this was something that needed to be addressed without telling you specifically everything about it and publishing everything about it, because I think it lets you know that there are some things that are going on in the world that you don't see. And for better or for worse, there are things that are happening that you don't see happening. And so when you think about the media, think about how the way the media behaves, it's not always the media that makes that decision. And there's more at work there than sometimes that you think. So, again, we won't publish the information. I pointed you to the places where you might be able to still find it. If you so choose, good luck in sleuthing that out. But that's something worth thinking about. That's all I'm going to say. Something worth thinking about. All right, back to the golf. This weekend we've got the Deutsche Bank Championship. It goes Friday to Monday. We cut from 100 players to 70 for the BMW Championship next week, which is also when the Web.com Tour Final starts. We'll determine the fate of 25 PGA Tour cards, the priority order of 50 over a four-week stretch on the Web.com Tour. We'll get closer to filling out the American Ryder Cup team with three captains' picks after the BMW Championship. We'll set up those picks next week after what happens in TPC Boston at the final Deutsche Bank, which will soon become something with EMC in the title because they're taking over as the title sponsor. So until then, please, if you listen to our show through iTunes or some other podcasting service, we'd really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star review. If you want to write us a review and add that 5-star rating, we are greatly appreciative. We'll answer your comments or questions in said review. Or you can just email those to me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Shoot me a tweet, @RyanBallenge. We appreciate follows as well for us and Golf Newsnet on there, as well Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat, whatever platform you choose to use. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.